All day they have shared the ampules of morphine. To unthread the story out of him, Caravaggio travels within the code of signals. When the burned man slows down, or when Caravaggio feels he's not catching everything, he picks up the syringe from the kidney-shaped enamel tin, breaks the glass tip off an ampule with the pressure of a knuckle, and loads it. He is blunt about all this now with Hannah, having ripped the sleeve off his left arm completely. All Marshy wears just a grey singlet, so his black arm lies bare under the sheet. Each swallow of morphine by the body opens a further door, or he leaps back to the cave paintings or to a buried plain, or lingers once more with the woman beside him under a fan, her cheek against his stomach. When all Marshy speaks, Caravaggio stays alongside him, reordering the events. On the floor of the Cave of Swimmers, after her husband had crashed their plane, he had cut open and stretched out the parachute she had been carrying. She lowered herself onto it, grimacing with the pain of her injuries. He placed his fingers gently into her hair, searching for other wounds, then touched her shoulders and her feet. It was already cold in the cave. He wrapped the parachute around her for warmth. He lit one small fire and burned the acacia twigs and waved smoke into all the corners of the cave. He found he could not speak directly to her, so he spoke formally, his voice against the bounce of the cave walls. "I'm going for help now, Catherine. Do you understand? There is another plane nearby, but there is no petrol. I might meet a caravan or a jeep, which means I'll be back sooner. I don't know." He pulled out the copy of Herodotus and placed it beside her. It was September 1939. He walked out of the cave, out of the flare of firelight, down through darkness and into the desert full of moon. He climbed down the boulders to the base of the plateau and stood there. No truck, no plane, no compass, only moon and his shadow. He found the old stone marker from the past that located the direction of El Taj, north-northwest. He memorized the angle of his shadow and started walking. A man walks as fast as a camel, 2.5 miles an hour. If lucky, he would come upon ostrich eggs. If unlucky, a sandstorm would erase everything. He walked for 3 days without any food. He refused to think about her. He was in broken country, had moved from sand to rock. Then hills emerged like medieval castles. He walked till he stepped with his shadow into the shadow of a mountain. Then there was El Taj. When he got to the outskirts of the settlements, English military jeeps surrounded him and took him away, not listening to his story of the woman injured at Uwainat, just 70 miles away, listening, in fact, to nothing he said. "Are you telling me the English did not believe you?" Caravaggio asked. "No one listened to you?" "No one listened. Why?" "I didn't give them a right name."
"Yours?"
"I gave them mine."
"Then what?"
"Hers, her name, the name of her husband."
"What did you say?"
The English patient says nothing.
"Wake up," Caravaggio says. "What did you say?"
"I said she was my wife. I said Catherine. Her husband was dead. I said she was badly injured in a cave in the Gulf Kebir at Uwainat, north of the Ain Dua well. She needed water, she needed food. I'd go back with them to guide them. I said all I wanted was a jeep. Perhaps I seemed like one of those mad desert prophets after the journey, but I don't think so. The war was beginning already. They were just pulling spies in out of the desert. Everyone with a foreign name who drifted into these small oasis towns was suspect. She was just 70 miles away, and they wouldn't listen. I must have gone berserk then." "They were using these wicker prisons, size of a shower. I was put into one and moved by truck. I was flailing around in there until I fell off onto the street, still in it. I was yelling Catherine's name, yelling the Gulf Kebir, whereas the only name I should have yelled, dropped like a calling card into their hands, was Clifton's. They hauled me up into the truck again. I was just another possible second-rate spy, just another international bastard."